welcome back to It's an Inside Job podcast. I'm your host, Jason Lim. Now, this podcast is dedicated to helping you to help yourself and others to become more mentally and emotionally resilient so you can be better at bouncing back from life's inevitable setbacks. Now, on It's an Inside Job, we decode the science and stories of resilience into practical advice, skills, and strategies that you can use to impact your life and those around you. Now, with that said, let's slip into the stream. Hey, folks, thanks for joining me for another episode and another week. This week, I'd like to continue the series where I talk to Ukrainians about their stories and experiences of resilience. Now, this particular episode is kind of very special. It's very unique because they have just recently opened the American University in Kiev. Now, it has been an online university for a bit, but the actual campus has had its launch. And it's not every day you get to speak to the founder or one of the founders of a university which has just actually opened a beautiful, gorgeous campus in the city of Kiev. And so in this episode, it is my pleasure, my privilege to introduce to you all Dr. Roman Sheremeta. Roman is listed as one of the top economic thinkers of Ukrainian descent by Forbes in 2015. He is a top-rated young economist in the world according to the Ideas ranking in 2018 and recognized as the best 40 under 40 professors by Poets and Quants in 2019. In addition to these accolades, he is also the author of more than 80 articles published in leading scholarly journals in economics, business, psychology, and political science. Now, Roman received many research and teaching awards, including the 2018 Smith Ascending Scholar Prize, as well as multiple grants, including the National Science Foundation and the Max Planck Institute grants. Prior to joining the American University of Kiev, Roman was an economics professor and a faculty director of MBA programs at the Weatherhead School of Management at Case Western Reserve University. He holds a PhD in economics from Purdue University. And with my great pleasure, and without further ado, let's slip into the stream and meet Dr. Roman Sheremeta. Well, Roman, thank you very much for joining me today on It's an Inside Job. I'd like to begin this conversation by maybe you introducing who you are and what you do.
Well, thank you for having me. My name is Roman Sheremeta. I am a founding rector of American University Kyiv, which is a key academic role. I basically build the departments, the schools, hire the deans, all the faculty. Besides that, I'm also a professor of economics at Weatherhead School of Management at Case Western Reserve University. But I am on leave right now from that institution. Obviously, cannot work at two places at once. And so I am building a university in Ukraine, in the middle of war. That's what I do right now.
And I think that's, we were talking just post-recording, how I think it's the irony where the Russians, or at least the Russian government, is creating destruction, unnecessary chaos. And there you are, you and your colleagues, building a university, an institute of learning, development, and growth. I mean, I couldn't, it is the symbolism, literally, of and figuratively, of resilience.
So, absolutely.
And I thought this would be an outstanding episode or a topic for an episode to talk about the birth of a university in these unprecedented times that you and your countrymen are facing. Perhaps we could start with why build a university? You know, Ukraine's filled with great universities, but why this one? Why particularly this one?
That is a great question. And so just to give you a little bit of background, I've been invited to come to Ukraine and do some significant projects. So, for example, I was already been invited three times to be the Minister of Education by the Ukrainian government. And I have refused every single time when I was offered for my candidacy to be considered, right? Because there is still a vote and there is still an appointment by the president and everything. But the point is, I always wanted to do something significant in the sphere of education in Ukraine, as well as economics. I'm an economist. And when the opportunity came to build a university, to build an institution that will create future leaders, that will reshape the system of higher education, I couldn't resist, because as the listeners probably don't know much about the Ukrainian system of higher education, yes, it has a very solid background coming from the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union higher education was pretty well, pretty good for that time. But the thing is that it's stuck. It got stuck there and it never moved forward. It's like a mammoth that is, you know, that is not, it's hard to turn. It's hard to adjust. And so the universities that we have today, like Harvard, Stanford, I mean, they change literally every second, every third year. You have a renewal of the programs, you have the change of the curriculum, you have a new technologies that are coming available. I mean, we can talk about ChatGPT and how that it's going to impact the education for the next couple of years, and we will need to redefine and rethink our programs, which we already do. And so given that it's the higher education system of Ukraine, even though it's well developed, there's more than 2.5. So if you compare, let's say, higher education system in Ukraine to Great Britain, there's 2.5 times more universities per capita in Ukraine than in Great Britain. So it's a very highly educated society, and people that are fighting today on the front, that's probably the most highly educated soldiers in the whole entire world. It's a much more highly educated army than in the United States, for example, because it's smart people with PhDs, master degrees, and bachelor degrees that are today on the front lines. Nevertheless, as I said, this education is lagging behind in many, many respects. And so we can talk about that in later. But the point is, there is a need for an educational institution that will be up to speed, up to the standards of the Western world, up to the standards of the best education institutions in the world, which happen to be the American education. So if you look at the Times Higher Education QS ranking, the US is a top, top leader and by far in this sphere. So that's why American University of Kyiv was is so important, and it came along with Arizona State University, partnership with Arizona State University as an American institution in Ukraine.
And why particularly the Arizona State University?
Oh, that's a great story. Imagine me being at Case Western Reserve University 3 years ago. I get this team of people that is visiting Case Western to find a collaboration with an American institution to open an American university in Ukraine. And so this team is visiting me at Case Western. I'm a professor there. So our president and provost says, hey, you should go and have a dinner with these folks, because maybe we can do something together with them in Ukraine. So I go on a dinner, and we have a great chat, and they go to Carnegie Mellon, they go to Johns Hopkins, they go to Stanford, and nothing really fits, because none of these universities have a sort of an outreach view, because if you take universities like Case Western, Carnegie Mellon, Stanford, we are very selective, and we like to be like that. You know, we like the fact that not everybody can get in these elite universities, and it's sort of education for the top students, right? That's what these universities are known for, and we are trying to emulate that model. We're trying to do that in Ukraine, and so they don't fit, right? They don't fit, because nobody wants to scale up and sort of move to a different country. And it changes when Kurt Volker, who was the special ambassador for negotiations between Ukraine and Russia in 2019 and 20, comes on the basically into the picture. And Kurt is a big, political figure. He was the ambassador to NATO. And he also was the first executive director of the John McCain Institute at Arizona State University. And he learns that this kind of, fits his also agenda of helping Ukraine to develop and to, be resilient against Russia. This is all before the war, but the war is already happening in the eastern Ukraine. It's just not at the full-scale invasion as it happened in 2022. And so here comes this educational sort of institution that continues the mission that he's already doing, and others are doing as well. Other funders are also doing that. And so basically, that's how this conversation started, with Kurt introducing Arizona to the team. And they're saying, you know what, Arizona is way better fitted for this than Stanford, than Case Western, than Harvard, mm-hmm. you know? And so, and then we start learning what Arizona is all about. And Arizona University has been number one university in innovation for the past 8 years in the United States, ahead of MIT, ahead of Stanford, and other top universities, because Arizona has done something really incredible in the past 8 years, mm-hmm. trying to actually scale up, not be very selective. Their slogan is to make higher education accessible to as many people as possible without sacrificing the quality. But the idea is that they're trying to outreach and go into other countries as well. And through Sentana Education, which is the third-party enterprise that has been trying to outsource Arizona University, the Arizona State University model to other universities in the world, there are 15 of them right now. And American University Kyiv is just one of them. Mm-hmm. So for American University Kyiv, this was a perfect partner to open an American university based on Arizona State University curriculum programs, Thunderbird School of Management, which is part of also Arizona State University. And, you know, you don't need to reinvent the wheel. You know, what they did, they just wanted to take some of the best practices that are happening in American universities. And Arizona State University was a perfect player for that.
So it sounds like the template is already being there. Just to clarify, right. This is not just an online university. This is where you've built a campus. There's a library. There's study halls. There's lecture halls. It's the whole.
Oh, Jason, I'll tell you more than that. I'll give lectures probably in 100-ish, 150 different universities around the world. Mm. I mean, you name it. Pretty much all the top universities in U.S. And also I gave talks at UK universities, in Germany, in Netherlands, in France, in Canada, in Australia. Some of the best campuses that I've seen are actually in Australia. Mm. So, and I've seen some beautiful campuses. But I'll tell you that this particular location of American University Kyiv for its first campus location is probably the best that I've seen so far. It's located right on the Dnieper River, in the Riverport building. So the building was the Riverport, and it's been remodeled to become the combination. We kept the old frescoes and the old, paintings on the walls, and we stripped to the brick. So you can see the brick and exposed brick, these old frescoes and these modern elements, and it's all combined into one really cool looking campus with some of the best views of Kyiv, because you have a Dnieper River right in front of you. All of the classrooms, like literally looking at the Dnieper River, face the river. I have a problem because I don't think the students will be able to study in the university. But anyway, it's a beautiful campus. It has a huge historical meaning because the building is, it's a river port. Mm-hmm. The Ukraine is some of the first settlements that happened in Kyiv came through river, obviously, by Vikings. And there's been a discovered, all very old ancient ruins underneath. And it's actually a historical site. We cannot do much to it because it's such a historical site that actually point out to 1,500 years old, that, point out to some of the very, very foundational events that happened in Ukrainian history. The building is made in the shape of a boat, which is also so cool because it's an American university. We're thinking, for our opening of the building ceremony, where we're going to have a ship coming from the United States to Ukraine, to our ship, you know, as it was on the Mayfield, you know, the pilgrims and all of that. I mean, there's so much symbolism, and symbolism matter, right? And so it has so much historicity to it. And that's the building that we actually going to have our first campus. And we are opening the building in 1 month. We already have the permits, all the official permits that came to us literally this week as we speak. We had all of the official permits for opening the building.
Because it's not every day that a university opens. And I feel very privileged to talk to some of your caliber in the midst of just about to launch a great university. So what degrees will the university be focusing on for the students?
So the first two schools that we've launched the university with is the School of Management. And the School of Digital Technologies, EPAM School of Digital Technologies. EPAM is one of the S&P 500 companies, one of our sponsors, and they also have their roots in a Slavic countries, including Ukraine is the biggest sort of place where they draw a lot of talent from. And so they have sponsored us, and so it's EPAM School of Digital Technologies. Now why these two schools? They're very objective reasons for that. First of one is, it's what's demanded on the market. The managers, top managers who fluently speak English and understand all of the global management trends and can come into any company and run the company. So that, and then IT, Ukraine has been one of the forerunners in the IT industry. And actually, if you look at the top 10 unicorns in the United States, you will find in every single one of them, there is a significant Ukrainian footprint, including Google, including Microsoft, and other big companies. And the big thing is that actually this has been the most resilient sector of Ukrainian economy during the war.
You asked me what are the two schools. Let me start from the beginning, okay? So we decided to go with the two schools, the School of Management and EPAM School of Digital Technologies. Now, the reason is twofold. So the first, there is a demand for managers in Ukraine, managers who speak fluent English, who can run the companies on a global scale. And the second is that when you look at the IT industry, the IT industry is actually probably by now the most important industry in Ukraine, because since the beginning of full-scale war, the IT industry has been the only industry that actually has grown in size and has increased in profitability, and it's the biggest export-oriented industry. So basically, there is this demand on the market for IT and for high-quality managers. So that's one reason. And the second reason is that it was easier for us to open a management school and to open IT school than it would be to open the School of Engineering, where you need to have all the labs and much more capital investment, or say medical school. And so basically for these two reasons, we have decided to go with these two schools. But that's just the beginning. We also plan to go with the medical school. We plan to open the School of Law. We plan to go with some other, liberal arts programs and schools. So we will move this step by step. Now, with these two schools, the School of Management and School of Digital Technologies, we have 9 programs in total. We have 5 programs in our School of Management, which is you have master's and bachelor programs in global management, in marketing, in business administration, in development. And then in the School of Digital Technologies, we have data science, software engineering, leadership as well for the computer scientists. And so that's basically where we dwell right now.
And what is the expected enrollment coming up in, I guess the autumn will be the first semester, the official kickoff the semester?
Jason, we are already running. We actually, we postponed our opening because of the war. I mean, imagine opening a university is already a hard task. We are opening in the middle of the war. And so we actually had our first group of students who came in September. And we had 152 students already. In this coming fall, we plan to add 350 for the total of 500 students, which will be, you know, in our beautiful campus and with our new programs. So, yeah, so we're running.
Okay, so forgive my ignorance. I did not know that. That's okay. Even more amazing. That's even more amazing. So this will the university, obviously, with the campus kickoff, and that will be in May, I presume. You said in 1 month the campus officially opens?
The campus officially opens. So when you come and visit us, Jason, I'm going to give you the tour and everything is going to be already open.
Eugene's already invited me to speak to Resilience to a class or create a course.
That's awesome.
I'll definitely be there at some point. Yes. For me, it's hard to imagine opening a university in the midst of a war, in the midst of a war of attrition, of unnecessary carnage and chaos. But there it is, the American University of Kiev, where the instigators of this war want to create destruction. The Ukrainians, on the other hand, want to build something, construct something, a center of learning, a center of growth, a center of development. And as you will discover, dear listener, in the second part, Roman talks about the university just not being a university, but it's a beacon of hope. It symbolizes that Ukraine has not been abandoned, and that Ukraine as a country, as a culture, as a people, as a society, will persevere. So now let's slip back into the stream, into part two with Roman. I mean, how is it with Arizona State? So they provide the template, the resources, and sort of the curriculum, and then you base it off that. And so the professors and such, are they Ukrainian? Is the faculty drawn from a global pool? I mean, how does that work?
So I have three requirements when I hire my faculty. Mm-hmm. So, and then it's such a pleasure, to be honest, that's the best part of the job, finding mm-hmm. great talent and getting them involved in this, you know, very landmark project in Ukraine. So the first one is that they have to be fluent in English. So obviously mm-hmm. it's all the teaching is in English. And that's just a requirement. You can't do without it. The second one, they have to have a significant international experience, which means, you know, they could be from the United States. So I have American faculty. I have five of them right now. They could be from Germany, Netherlands, which I do have them. They could be also from Ukraine, which I do have them as well. But all of them have to have significant international experience of teaching in English in different programs, different universities. So that is a requirement. And then the third one, I want to make sure that they are decent researchers. So at least mm-hmm. some part of their academic career is tied to research. And the reason is very important. As we spoke at the beginning, mm-hmm. you know, why do we open a university? And we want to move into this practice where university is not only a place where you distribute the knowledge, but where you actually generate the knowledge. Because you can transfer the knowledge, you know, by teaching somebody else's theories and, you know, books and and other things. But I also want to make sure that people that come to our university, they generate original research, they generate knowledge, and that they can transfer that knowledge onto our students. I mean, who else would be better suited to teach game theory than somebody who writes articles and research on game theory, right? So that's kind of the idea. And those are the three criteria on which I have built our faculty. And our faculty, as I said, they come from the United States, they come from Netherlands, they come from Germany, they come from Poland, they come from Ukraine.
So it's a good spread globally, and I think that's what also makes it fascinating. And also, it's in English. It's sort of the lingua franca of the modern world, if we can call it that. So you talked about this major partnership with Arizona State University. I was wondering what other partnerships is the AUK, you know, interested in.
So right now we are trying to partner with Arizona as much as possible. And this is because we have what is called dual degrees with Arizona State University. Mm-hmm. So when the student comes to AUK, let's say to get their bachelor's degree, they study for 3 years in a program that is very similar or almost identical to Arizona. So after the 3 years, Arizona will accept the 3 years of studies in Ukraine for Arizona. And then for the fourth year, they will study either online in Arizona or in Arizona, or actually go on campus to Arizona. And they get an Arizona State University diploma, and they get also American University Kyiv diploma, because that last year we also transfer to AUK. So that gives a very unique option for our students to get both an American diploma and a Ukrainian diploma. That's why we are trying to maximize this relationship. That being said, we have some things that we want to also open with other schools. So, for example, medical school is not at Arizona. So we will need to find some other partners with a medical school. Our current president, Dan Rice, is basically a graduate from the West Point. And we want to also go into the military direction because, look, it's a very unique time in Ukraine. I think, and I think everybody agrees today in the world, that Ukraine will be teaching not NATO countries of how to fight and how to, you know, use some of the best practices. I mean, nobody has as much experience in wars right now than Ukraine. I mean, and some of the equipment that is being tested and the leadership approaches to fighting is, you know, and it's a unique opportunity. So we do want to make sure that we partner with, let's say, West Point, and we have some, you know, potential collaborations that we're already exploring today. And there will be other ones. So, of course, we're going to look at the potential partners who want to come on board with us and do something unique and something that will benefit both the United States, Europe, and Ukraine.
I think that's definitely unique, especially if you're taking the discipline and the educational system, the curricula from one of the greatest, you know, schools such as West Point, and blend that, and you have management, leadership, you have the digital and IT side, medical, perhaps law. Yes. I mean, plus with the great campus, I've seen some of the photos of the layout and such. I think it's a very unique combination. At least I haven't come across something like that before.
I think we are in a very unique position, both in terms of the quality of the university that we have trying to establish and already established, and then on top of that, the time of the history. I mean, think about this. This is a country that is fighting for freedom from independence in a time of war, and the American university is being open, and it's so almost prophetic, profound, that our slogan that we have established before the war was education that gives you freedom. And right now, Ukraine is fighting literally for its freedom. And it's just freedom in terms of a physical freedom, but it's also freedom of the mind, the freedom of ideas, and the freedom to live your life as you want. And that's exactly what it's all about.
You know, at that sort of that confluence of starting a university in the midst of the war and, you know, education that gives you freedom, your slogan, that I think that's a good segue, because I'd just like to sort of talk about the current situation that Ukraine is going. You know, starting in university during this war is definitely a unique challenge. I was wondering, Roman, if you could share some insights into the opportunities and the obstacles that the university is launching during this period, what it's facing, and how it's kind of navigating through these crazy circumstances.
Yeah, Jason, thank you for this question. I actually would like for the listeners to take you guys on the journey. Imagine that you are put in my place or the place of our faculty. You're moving to a foreign country, to Ukraine. And we have, as I said, quite a few faculty that are from the United States and other countries. And you have this dream to build a university, and you're excited for the opportunities. And then the war starts. The rockets start flying. And literally, people are scattered. The students had to run. faculty has to flee. Some faculty went to Poland, some went to Georgia, some went to the United States, but some went to Netherlands. And you have this as an obstacle, a significant obstacle that you actually, and that's why we had to go online. Thankfully, because of Arizona, because our programs were built through LMS learning management system like Canvas, and we had basically such a good system in place that we could move online without sacrificing too much on the quality of the delivery. Because we had a very nice and good quality video recordings from Arizona. So as I said, Arizona has done the job for us. And it was really, and Santana has helped us. So we were able to do that because it was a huge challenge. One of my faculty, when we were literally in the first months of operation in late February, that's when the war started, and then in March, she was in Sumy, surrounded by Russian troops, and her house is being bombarded. She's in the basement. She cannot leave because she has her parents who are both handicapped. And so she literally cannot leave. And I'm in constant conversations with her. By that time, I was already back in the States. I mean, I'm safe, but my team, you know, who was not able to get out in time is there, and it's painful. Look, I cried quite a few times, especially speaking to some of these faculty members who are behind, and I don't know what will happen. You know, I literally don't know the next day if they're still going to be there. So I mean, talking about challenges, we had some of the most difficult obstacles that you can imagine, and then obviously the building that we were planning to reconstruct the building in a couple months, and everything is in pause, everything stopped. I mean, nobody's thinking about you know, reconstructing the building and doing the renovation when you don't even know if it's going to survive, if the rocket is going to hit you next day. And obviously the demand in terms of just applications from the students went down because our students who are fluent in English, who could study in our university, well, they actually were the first one to think of maybe I should study in Europe, maybe I should study in the United States, maybe I should study in another country. And I'm fluent in English, so I may as well go there because it's safer there. So our core student profile is actually was impacted the most. And so all of these were very significant challenges. Financial strain, because, you know, our students who were planning, hey, we're going to pay for this education. Now they're, let's make sure that we can survive because we lost our house, we lost our home, or we have to reallocate to the Western Ukraine. So, I mean, you name it. You name it, we were facing some of the most difficult challenges that a university could face, and we made it. We made it.
And so, I'd like just to dive into that mindset to understand how you and your faculty came through it, because you're presented with these unprecedented dilemmas and these conundrums, and you have to try to crack the code. I mean, at first, I guess, did you feel like overwhelmed by just the mess that this chaos has brought? And like, how did you, your team and the faculty like push through it? I mean, can you talk a little about the DNA of your mindset as a group to push through this?
Yeah, that's a great, great question. Maybe one day I will write a book about it because I mean, think about it, right? I mean, I'll be honest with you. The first 2 weeks were probably the most difficult ones. It's like a part of your DNA, your soul, and it's been completely destroyed or, you know, put in such big jeopardy, such a risk. I mean, it may never happen, you know? And so there are a couple of things that really helped us push through. First one, it was the fact that we are more than just a university. We are here to help Ukrainian people. And it's a beacon of hope, if you will, you know, that is stands more than just for the university, because it symbolizes that Ukraine has not been abandoned, that we will persevere, we will continue despite the war. And Ukraine has not been abandoned by American as well. And so that was the first thing that really helped us. The second thing that really helped was helped us was the fact that we already had a core team. So we already had the core people, we had faculty, and having the right people with the right mindset who were already very supportive of Ukraine, and they have put that sort of team of people, that selection already happened. So when I had, for example, one of our faculty, Rans Wolderman, who moved to Netherlands, but he said, Roman, I'm willing to cut my salary. I understand the challenges, but I want to continue. I want to help you out, guys. You know, and everybody was kind of chipping in and ready to take the cut. You know, for example, I didn't get paid, you know, for some time as well. And we were ready. We were willing to take our sacrifice, and having that sort of team was really helpful. The third thing that was really important is that we had a structure. And I think that's a lesson for anybody, any organization. If you have a structure in place, which we had our learning management system, we had our classes, curriculum, we had just all the right elements in place. And so when things went just, you know, crazy, there was a structure. There was a plan in place. There were meetings, regular meetings that were taking place. And we were just continuing doing business as usual because there was a structure in place. And then the last thing, we had the right partners, right? I mean, you cannot, in this world, cannot survive by yourself. You have to have the right people. Having Arizona State University by our side, having Santana organization that was helping us to orchestrate and navigate through this very, very difficult time has been invaluable. Without them, we would not have been able to do what we have done. So those are the four kind of things that right away come to my mind, why we were able to persevere.
You know, and I see a lot of parallels in what you're talking about as a team, as a faculty, as a group of people striving together through the chaos. And so what I hear is actually the way I've looked at it, it's almost like four P's. You know, you're driven by a purpose. As you said, we're not just a university. We are a beacon. Yeah, we're a beacon for the Ukrainian, that there is hope, that there is still fire burning, right? And then I hear that there's also a passion. There's a passion to deliver something of quality, to create an environment of growth and development for the generation to come, but also for Ukraine as a country, as a nation, as a culture. And that passion is where people say, you know what? I'm willing to take a hit financially because I want to do this. I will bend over backwards for this cause. Then I hear another thing is a plan. We have a structure. When you have a plan, when you have things in place, then you have a sense of certainty. You have a sense of agency and autonomy to build this entity that we call a university, which is much more than just a university, but just a entity, if I may call it. And then the fourth one, what I hear very important is the partners. It's the support, the trust, the people who've got your back to build a thing in the time of chaos. And for me, that is very, it kind of warms my heart to hear that when you have a group of human beings who are willing to build something in the chaos, in the risk, to create something, you know, to construct something out of the destruction that another government is trying to cause. For me, I think
it's amazing. Like the way you put it, I mean, I'm going to listen to this podcast myself probably a couple times. I'm going to take some of the notes here, and I'm not even kidding. And I will probably apply and do another TED talk in the future based on this, because just the way that you summarize it, and it's so, you know, in starting with a passion and then, you know, I mean, this is the structure, the plan, the everything. Wow, it's so good. I really, really like the way you framed it. It's perfect.
Well, thank you for that. The American University of Kiev has a slogan, education that gives you freedom. But in this case, it's physical freedom. It's mental freedom. It is a beacon of hope, as we've discovered in the first two parts of this conversation. Building such an institution as the AUK, well, that's not a walk in the park. It takes a lot of sweat, blood, and tears in order to do that. Roman, his colleagues, the faculty, the students, in creating an institute of learning and growth. and creating a culture and creating a safe place for students and faculty to learn and to prosper and to create a stepping stone for Ukraine's future. But in order to do this, there were four major building blocks. There was the purpose, the plan, the passion, and the partners. So now let's slip into the stream. It's a part three and the final part of my conversation with Roman. When we picture a sort of an American university, we think of the quads, the greens, the buildings, students walking with books to and fro from classes, the different lecture halls. But then that's what we think of a university. And that's what I see, how you've described it. At the same time, you know, people are picturing what they see in the news is incoming rockets slamming into buildings and creating the destruction and chaos. Could you paint us a picture of what it's like in Kyiv right now, even in the midst of this war, what it's like to be on this campus?
So you have to understand that the war has been going on for more than a year now.
Mm.
And people are resilient beings, right? So when the war hit, the first 2 weeks, 3 weeks were just incredibly difficult. Mm-hmm. When Kyiv was liberated and I came to Kyiv and I saw the destruction, I saw what happened in Bucha, in Irpin, I even saw some corpses still laying on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, that was devastating. And then the city was almost dead. You can feel that tension in the air. But people, as I said, are very resilient. Bucha is almost completely restored now. Kyiv, all the blog posts and everything is taken out. Like people, you have the same traffic jams that you have had before. In a way, I'm not that happy about it, you know, but the life goes on. The life goes on. And yes, once in a while, what reminds you that you're in the middle of the war is the air raid sirens. You sometimes hear the air defense systems working, and they've been pretty good. I mean, 80% of rockets have been shot down, and when they hit, Russians don't have that many rockets, and those rockets are super expensive, $4-5 million. Artillery shell that the Russians have used against Ukraine would cost $500 million. And then Russia is not that country that has such a capacity. So they actually stopped the shelling as much with these rockets. What is true is on the front line, around Bakhmut, around those areas where the fighting is so fierce, that's where really the life is very different. In Kyiv, life is almost back to normal, I would say. And in fact, if you were here, you probably would not even know that the war is going on if you didn't see military guys in the form walking outside on the streets and if you didn't hear air raid sirens.
Wow. And so what I hear is that Kyiv, to some degree, has returned to some level of normalcy where people are going out to dinner, to cafes, doing shopping, taking their kids to school, going to work.
Absolutely.
And so when is the official kickoff for the university? Is there a specific date that's been set?
So the official kickoff is already started. So we have a university, but then we do want to bring people to campus, right? And so when the campus, that's going to become a kind of second birth for us. And that will be the big event. We're still deciding on the exact date. We know that our students are going to come back on campus in August, middle of August. We're still working on the day when this big day is going to happen. We will have a big ceremony. God willing, we probably will have even the president of Ukraine there. But absolutely, we want to make it a big celebration because, as I said, it is more than a university.
If you had to share some of your advice based on your experience, obviously from your background, from what's been going on, to a team, to a leader, it could be head of a faculty, head of a team, head of a project team, what advice would you give to a leader for him or her to create resilience on their team, to lead themselves and to lead others?
The one thing that I wish I would have done, and this is, again, looking in a retrospective, it's everybody is smart afterwards. but is to have always to have a backup plan. To have, you have your plan A, how things are going to go. You have everything planned. You have your projections for sales. If you have your projections for whatever enterprise you're running or you're working at, you have a plan. As a sportsman, you have a plan. But then you need to always have an sort of plan B and plan C. You know, if that were not to happen, what are you going to do? And one of the things that we have not done well is that we should have been prepared for the war time scenario much, much earlier. We saw the tension on the border. We saw the sort of what was happening, and we should have been a little bit better prepared, but we were prepared. I mean, it's just, as I said, having that plan, alternative plan, just what if this doesn't happen? What do we do next? And that is very important. And for me, it's also important as an economist, because as an economist, we always think of the opportunity cost. If this were not to happen, you know, what would you do with these resources? And so that's a very important thing. And the second thing, besides having the plan, oh, by the way, I need to take this this part here. We actually did research on the evacuation from the war zone and the territories that are being under shelling right now. Mm-hmm. And we tried to make people move, encourage them to move out of those territories. We did it. We set up an experiment where we sent different messages, and we did 8 different messages. Nothing worked. But the only thing, when we described to people the concrete plan of evacuation, that was it. By giving people a plan, it was the only thing that worked. And just today we had a call with the governor of the occupied territories. Mm-hmm. And they basically were telling them, look, guys, this is what you need to have. You need to have a plan and deliver that plan to people. And that's how they will be most likely to move if they know that there is a plan. So I guess this plan is really something that I would encourage every leader to have, and have alternative plan. And of course, as I said, have the right team, have the right people. If we had the wrong people on our team, we would have never been able to do what we have been able to do. It's all about people. Any organization is all about people. And it's worth more than any sort of investment. And it's, once you find the right people, right personnel, that's the most important asset. And as you said, the university, as the way you picture it, as a, you know, buildings, green grass, the way that I picture university, it's the people. Mm. It's, you know, that can move to any place in the world. It's the students and the faculty. And you just give them a place, whether it's a virtual place or your physical place, but you put the people in it, and that's the university.
And it's an incredible story, and it's an incredible journey that started a while ago. But as you said, your second official kickoff or rebirth will be with the physical campus of this beautiful building along the riverfront there with so much history. And I think this is a really great story of resilience. I mean, you couldn't ask for any better story arc than this conversation, Roman. So I really appreciate your time. Is there any last thoughts, maybe questions that I haven't touched on that you would like to share with our audience? I'm just very appreciative of your time.
Yes. So I'll take this opportunity to invite everyone who is listening to this podcast to support us, to support Ukraine, first of all, to support Ukraine in any way possible, whether to raise an awareness, donate to the humanitarian aid or any sort of organization, or maybe you can even be brave enough to go and do something on the ground. There's going to be a lot of things that we will need to rebuild. It's somebody, maybe if you faith-based person, you can go on the mission trip. Just support this country that is in some way so similar to the United States of America in its fight for freedom in 17th century, when 18th century, when we were fighting for our freedom. This is really what this country is all about. It's trying to win because they want to be free. They don't want to be subject to any other country. And so standing for freedom, standing with Ukraine is such an important thing for any country today. And so if you can join us in this fight, this is in any capacity, this would be great. And the second thing is, if you can join also our efforts, if you're a faculty or somebody who can teach or can share the academic experience, please contact me, get a hold of our university. We would love to put you in touch and put you to use. If you can give a guest lecture, maybe teach a discipline, we would love to involve you. If you can donate financially, again, we have students who have suffered a lot. We have students, most of our students have some people that are either fighting on the front line or even lost because of the war. And so if you can provide a scholarship or a part of the scholarship for them, that can transform and impact their lives. So please join us in our effort to rebuild Ukraine, to help Ukraine win this fight, both on the ground and in the minds and hearts of people.
Well said, Roman. I'll make sure that your contact information is all included in the show notes, plus a link to the university, of course. But Roman, thank you very much for your time, and thank you for sharing your story and your experience on It's an Inside Job today. I very, very much appreciate it.
It was incredible, Jason. Actually, you helped to structure a lot of things in my own mind. It was a really, really good conversation.
Well, thank you for that.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you.
Well, folks, that was the amazing Dr. Roman Sharmeta. And a personal thank you to you, Roman, from myself. I really appreciate the time that you've afforded me today on It's an Inside Job. For me, it meant a lot, and I learned a lot. And I'm encouraged by what you have to say about what this university symbolizes. Not just that it's a learning institute, but it's a beacon of hope. It's a message. It's a symbol to the Ukrainian people and the greater world that whatever your aggressors do, that the Ukrainian culture, society, and people, and its learning institutions will persevere and move into the future. So thank you again, Roman, for your time. And also special thanks out there to Eugene and to Svetlana for making the contact between myself and Roman. I also appreciate your efforts. And if any of you listeners out there are interested in learning more about the American University of Kiev or of Roman, I will leave all his contact information as well as the contact information to the university in the show notes. Well, folks, that brings us to an end of another episode. If you have any feedback, comments, or questions, I'm always open to hearing from you. And if you could invest 2 minutes to recommend this to 2 colleagues, 2 family members, to 2 friends, I'd appreciate that also. Well, I wish you all a good week, and until the next time we meet, the next time we continue this conversation of resilience, keep well, keep strong, and we'll speak soon.